This is the Premier League Preview Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Premier_podcast. Find us on Facebook under Premier League Preview Podcast or online at plpreview.com.
Hello, you're very welcome to the Premier League Preview Podcast. I'm Sean Fitzmaurice. I'm joined as always by Mr. Owen Maloney.
Howdy.
We're absolutely delighted that the international break is over and we can start talking about Premier League games again.
Oh, definitely. Especially after sitting through that viciously woeful Ireland against Georgia game. Probably the worst game of football in the history of games of football. So yeah, back to Premier League and a really good derby as well. So yeah, yeah, really looking forward to it.
Let's not even talk about international football. It's not worth talking about.
Ugh.
As always, we're very proud to be part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. And also, you can find us online at plpreview.com. You can find details of all our subscription services there. Donate to us, buy us a coffee for the excellent service we provide to you on a weekly basis. Or else you can follow us on Twitter at @Premier_podcast or on Facebook at Premier League Preview Podcast. Now, all of that is out of the way. Let's talk about Match Week 9. And the game of the week has to be the matchup of United versus Liverpool.
Absolutely. The bitterness. You can't wait. I just can't wait. It's the game that I suppose every United or Liverpool fan kind of grew up just loving, waiting for. It's the game you want more than anything else. Like, it really, I know people from Liverpool that are fans obviously will say Liverpool-Everton is probably the biggest game in the calendar, but it just isn't. Like, this is Liverpool-Man United is probably one of the biggest rivalries in world football, and
absolutely,
it's just I just can't wait for it to be next Sunday already now and get the ball rolling and just see what transpires on the field.
Yeah, I know it's going to be a good one, and it would appear on paper that Liverpool are in good form. They've won their last 8 games in the Premier League. They've won their last 18 games and 17 games in the Premier League. This will be the 18th if they win it. It would appear that United are in terrible form, but as we all know, when it comes to this game, there is no form. Form goes out the window.
Oh, 100%. We've talked about it in fairly in depth, and as you said, through the Van Gaal times when things were bad, even last year when things weren't going great for United, they just shut up shop. When it was one of Solskjaer's first games, wasn't it? It was early in his tenure anyway, and they just shut up shop and got a draw. Like, you'd imagine the balance of power is now with Liverpool after a few years, but you, as you said, you just don't know what this rivalry. It's like it's thrown up some of the strangest results, strangest games. Sometimes you're expecting an absolute rip-roaring clash, and then you get games like we did last year in Old Trafford where it's just a damp squib. But this is a game that I suppose United really need to be getting something from. They just have to. They're at home. Yeah. The pressure is just ratcheting up every week. Every week, the pressure on Ollie gets bigger. The pressure on the players gets bigger. The media are coming on top of them more and more. And now, like, they've got 1 point in their last 3 games. They probably nearly need a performance more than they need the point if they were to get a draw, you'd say. But the performance is what they really need.
It is kind of a game that has a tendency to keep a manager in a job.
Yeah.
Like, they're speaking from a Liverpool perspective, because United obviously have had the better years throughout the Premier League, but during the dark days of Liverpool in the early Premier League days, times of Gerard Houllier, when, you know, he might not have performed well all season, but you beat United at home and away, that's usually enough to keep the fans happy, you know?
Absolutely. It's more than just 3 points. Like, it's bragging rights for however long. Sometimes it's 6 months, sometimes it's a month. You just don't, however long until the next meeting. But it is more than just one football game, for sure.
On the other hand, though, if it turns out that United take a bad beating from Liverpool this weekend, you have to seriously worry about Ollie's position at the club.
Oh, 100%. This is why this meeting of the two clubs is really important, because this can completely turn around United's fortunes, in a sense where they go and get one over their bitterest, well, one of their most bitterest rival, and turn their own wretched form around. If they can put in a performance and it builds momentum, that'd be massive for them. It's a step in the right direction after an international break. But if Liverpool go and beat them 2-0 or 3-0 in their own backyard, and then after the international break and you're continuing from where you've left off, very quickly again things will turn sour. So this really feels like the club itself, Ollie, the team are walking a tightrope here, and it depends what way they kind of go. It could make a massive difference to their season, because as we've said, like, 1 point from their last three games, if that ends up being 1 point in your last four games, like, they're sitting in 12th. Like, it's going to be very hard for them to make up ground if they can just keep putting in dire performances. So yeah, this is the perfect one for them to turn it around.
Yeah, and in previous years, Liverpool would have always, no matter what the United side was, Liverpool would have always looked at it and thought, you know, this is going to be a hard game. We're going to be under pressure here. But looking at the current United side, like we spoke about last week when Liverpool were playing Leicester City, and it looked like, you know, you could say, oh, Jamie Vardy's going to have a field day against Liverpool centre-backs. But when you look at the United side, there's not really too much to worry Liverpool, is there?
No.
At the moment.
No, they are lacking a marquee goal scorer. Not sure what Anthony Martial's status is. I'd imagine he'll be back fit, but I don't know. He's had a couple of weeks off now, like, he's humming and hawing.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he is fit. I don't know if he travelled with France or anything in the international break.
If he's out, it's a big loss, because Rashford is struggling for form. Lingard has been out of form for a long time. Mason Greenwood is still learning his trade. Like, you have not much there that will worry Liverpool's defence. And while Liverpool's defence hasn't been as ridiculously rock solid as it was last season, it's still not yielding that much. Like, they've conceded six goals. They've conceded least goals in the league still. And Leicester are second with seven. Right. So that'll tell you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Liverpool have looked shaky to back, but yet still they have the best defence in the Premier League as of game week 9. So I don't see United's front three getting much change out of Liverpool's back four. Unless, now, the one thing I want to say is, if United can't get up and they don't have a bit of fire in the belly and come out with a good bit of fight and take it to Liverpool in this fixture, then they won't get it. Like, when's it going to come all season? Like, this feels like a massive moment for Ole's managerial reign and for this club. Like, it feels like they really, really, really need a performance this weekend. It really does.
Yeah, even from the point of view of the players, maybe if they're not getting on with the management, or they're not happy with what's going on at the club, or they're not happy at the club at all, this is a different game. This is a status game. This is going to be shown all over the world. Mm-hmm. And normally, even if United are in bad form, or if they're unhappy with the manager, or things are not going well, and the same at Liverpool, that's what I said earlier on, form just goes out the window with this game, and players that maybe you haven't seen perform all season just bring out their absolute best. And I really hope for the neutral that that's exactly what happens, like, and we get a good game of two teams that really want to win the game. But if the start of the season form for United continues, then we're not going to get that kind of game. And it's going to be, I don't like to say easy, but it's going to be easier than it should be for Liverpool going there.
Yeah. In fairness to United, like, they've defended well in patches, but they just lack creativity. They have lacked creativity going forward. Like, they've only conceded 8 goals. No, it's not exactly a hectic defensive record, but it's not that bad.
Yeah,
they're not extraordinarily leaky, but they're just, there's just nothing, there's no spark, no creativity, no flame up front. So it's hard to build on that when, even if you are defending well, you're getting no change out of your striker. So then, like,
I mean, it's really up to Ollie to get them fired up before this game.
They need to be hopping off the ground now. They need to be in Liverpool's faces, tormenting them, antagonising them, just making it a real battle rather than a game of football, because they'd probably lose a game of football right now, you know,
exactly,
the way they're playing. They need to really turn this into that rivalry game rather than just a game of football against 11, because they don't match up well with Liverpool. And now, even with Salah, like, his injury doesn't look that bad. He didn't travel with Egypt, which was a boost for Liverpool. He should be fine. They're like, Liverpool have won their first 8 games. They're going to really be looking at this game. They want to keep that run going. They want to break that record. They want to win their next 2 games and break that winning run of 19 consecutive Premier League wins. So they have plenty to play for as well, not to mention they're 8 points clear of Man City. They will not want to give up a point, because they know even 8 points is a great lead on Man City.
Yeah.
That can close very quickly. If they lose their first game against Man City, all of a sudden that gap it doesn't look as comfortable. So there's plenty on the line for Liverpool too. So yeah, it will be an interesting one for sure.
Yeah, I suppose one thing that will go in United's favour is Liverpool have probably more players that travelled further afield in the international break.
Yeah.
Firmino and Mane, I think they played against each other in one of the international...
In Singapore, of all places, strange enough.
Yeah. So, whereas I think most of the United players that travelled would have travelled with the England squad. If I'm thinking about Daniel James and Rashford and McTominay and Harry Maguire, they all travelled.
Wan-Bissaka, did he...
I think he. I don't think he travelled. I don't think he played because he's still injured. I don't know if he'll be fit for the Liverpool game.
That would be a big loss again for them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Can we just actually reference, how in the name of God, just out of curiosity, who schedules or sets up a Brazil versus Senegal friendly in Singapore?
Somebody who's looking to sell a lot of tickets in Singapore, probably.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I know, is this a Liverpool kind of thing? Because I know there's a massive following in Singapore and Malaysia for Liverpool.
I think normally with these friendlies, I know Brazil played Spain in Craven Cottage a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I think it's because most of the Brazilian players are based in Europe.
So fair enough, yeah.
Rather than having all of the Brazilian players and the African players from Senegal traveling to Rio de Janeiro for a game, they have it somewhere closer to the European continent.
That's fair enough. That's a good explanation. That was just to satiate my own curiosity, and I hope your listeners are delighted too.
Yeah, you see, Owen's the kind of guy who generally wears a tinfoil hat, and there's always a conspiracy going on.
There's not always a conspiracy. I just like to...
They're always looking for the conspiracy.
Yeah, that's sure. Why not? Why not?
If there's one there to find...
Oh, I'll find it. Don't you worry about that. I don't... No, you're making me out to be a creep now, and people are going to think I'm crazy. I'm not. I just question everything.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely not.
Well, why don't we question what the result of this game is going to be now?
Jesus, I'm nearly afraid to give predictions because the things that I've predicted in the last few weeks, you'd be a poor man if you were doing accumulators listening to us. But I don't know. I have a funny feeling that, like, maybe it's just my pessimistic side, but I don't know. I just have a funny feeling United are going to try and frustrate the living daylights out of Liverpool and might succeed. Could be similar enough to the game last year. Yeah, I could maybe see a nil all. But, like, obviously looking at form, you'd have to favour Liverpool. But, as we said, form goes out the window in this fixture. So, I would... Oh, it's such a horrible prediction. But, yeah, I'm going to think it's going to be a nil all. And it'll be a moral victory for Ollie and his side, holding the league leaders to draw. And that might kickstart a bit of a change in fortunes for them. But, yeah, I'll go nil all. And hopefully I'm wrong.
I never think in these games between United and Liverpool... It's very, very rare that you'll get a high-scoring game.
Yeah,
There has been a few in history, but it's very rare that it happens. And no matter how poor United's form is at the moment, they're still going to frustrate Liverpool.
You could maybe see a midfield here of, like, for Liverpool, of, like, Gini, Milner, Henderson, a real workhorse trio where they don't want to give away anything either. And I could see that United will probably play Mata and... Would they play your man Tounsebi left back and maybe...
Possibly, yeah.
And play Pereira and Mata or Matic?
Yeah.
I think that could happen. So
true, yeah.
I think you'll see two relatively... Well, for Liverpool, I think you'll see a relatively conservative midfield selection.
Yeah.
And I think United will play a defensive team. So it could be one of those games that it's built, you know. They always do that Monday night football. Or the Sky Sports call it? The Red Derby or something like that.
Yeah.
And they bill it as a massive, massive game. And of course, then it just disappoints and it's just like watching paint dry. So that's why I'm favouring that paint drying 90-minute exhibition, but
I think Liverpool are going to win it because the form of the two clubs at the moment and the chasm of quality between the two clubs at the moment. But I think it's going to be like a stinking 1-0 kind of victory.
Oh, I'll take that all day long. 100%. Yeah, bite your hand off for that.
Every Liverpool fan in the world will take that all day.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, seeing as we're talking about the top of the table, let's talk about the close running second.
Close running, I wouldn't say that now.
Well, it could be after this weekend because, I mean, if Liverpool don't get a result in Manchester, you can be pretty much guaranteed that City are going to win at Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that's actually a point we must make, I suppose, about Liverpool's upcoming games. That's like the 8 points and what we've talked about, like, is how quickly that lead can dissipate. You have United, Liverpool going to away to United, their biggest rivalry. They have Spurs coming soon.
Yeah.
and
Villa,
and then who's
City
and
Villa.
City.
Yeah.
So there you go. Very quickly, 8 points could become two or three.
Yeah.
So, like, it's going to be. It, that's why I think there's more pressure again on this Liverpool United game. But again, equally, this is a big game now for City too. They have a chance to narrow that gap to five before Liverpool go and play United. And then I think we've seen that in the Premier League in years gone by, that when you play first in a game week, it gives you the mental edge. And this is a chance now for City to go and obtain the mental edge again.
Exactly. And sorry to be harping back to the Liverpool United game, but that's a very good point you make, that there's equally as much pressure on Liverpool in this game for different reasons as there is for United. So that will obviously play a massive factor in the game.
Klopp will be playing down that record, but Jesus, Liverpool want that. Like, as a club that prides themselves on their honours, like European honours, title winning honours, and being the winning most English team with most major trophies, this is something that the club itself will want to add to its bow.
Absolutely.
Like, this is a massive honour. So that will play a part, and don't let anyone tell you it won't. It will.
Yeah.
And obviously, with City having played the day before, if they go and win, it ramps it up that little bit more. And we saw it away to Chelsea as well. Like, when the pressure came on Liverpool, they looked a small bit susceptible. So that's why I've kind of leaned for a nil-all draw, because you might just see Liverpool have that bit of pressure. This is the first game they'll have played with that 8-point lead as well, which is significant.
Yeah.
So let's see how they react. Will they be of the mindset, let's kick on and widen this gap? Or will it be a defensive mindset whereby they try and protect the 8-point lead? And if that happens, it is going to be hell to watch for Liverpool fans, because when you try and protect the lead like that, there's only one thing that's going to happen. It's going to dwindle before your eyes. So
yeah,
I think that'll make it interesting.
Anyway, let's get back to the City Palace game that we were starting to
talk about. Yeah.
On paper, obviously, this looks like a City win, but it's the way Palace are performing and the way Palace can counter-attack. It's obviously no foregone conclusion, especially if you look at what happened last week between Wolves and City, which Wolves, very well organised, two goals on the counter. City definitely looked poor for the most part, you know, and that's, you have to take your hat off to Wolves and say it's down to Wolves and down to their tactics. So given that Crystal Palace play a very similar game every single week against every single team, you would imagine that it's not as easy as it could be for City.
No, I think City's air of invincibility from the 2018-2019 season is now gone. It has been, that has been lifted. Like, they've lost two of their last four games. We might have said the Norwich game was a bit of a blip, but it ain't. And they showed it again against Wolves. So, City, as you said, Palace have been the surprise package this year. We all thought, last year started terribly. Roy Hodgson did a miracle to end up where they were. And I looked at their squad this year and thought, they have nothing. Like, they don't really have anything there. Yeah. Their best player has been vocal about not wanting to be there. And you're thinking, this is the recipe of just, if it has to go wrong, it has to be a disaster. And eventually, but no, they have been good. And it's surprising me, but I think the biggest factor in this game is Selhurst Park.
Yeah.
Saturday evening game in Selhurst Park is just one of the worst places you want to be going. And if Palace give their team anything, or if give their fans, sorry, anything to cheer about, this is going to become a real kind of siege fortress mentality place to go. And I think City won't enjoy that. And especially, as you said about the counter-attacking game, if Palace are hitting on the counter a bit and the crowd gets up, the nerves will creep into that City back four. And I don't care what anyone says, they will.
The only thing I'd say against that is Palace are one of these teams that have this bizarre record that they win more games away from home than they do at home. I think they only won five games at home last season. Jeez. All their wins came away from home. And it's because of that way they set up to counterattack. They do that at home and away, but it seems for some reason to suit them more in away games, so they get more results away from home. I know if I was a Selhurst Park season ticket holder, I'd be fairly disappointed with my return of wins. But going back to what I said before, I think with the point you just made, if Palace organise themselves well and organise their counter-attacks well, which they can do with Zaha and Ayew, they're in with a chance.
Yeah.
We
saw it against United. They did it against United and it worked effectively.
The only thing is, if you look back in very recent history, when City lost to Norwich, the following week they came out and put 8 past Watford.
Yeah.
in a kind of a almost took out their frustrations on Watford, and you would think they'd be looking to do a similar thing at Palace.
Yeah, but you know what? A big thing in that, and it's another trend that you see with City. If they score early, they'll tear teams apart.
Yeah.
That's something that Palace will really have to avoid, because they're going to need the crowd on their side. And if City go and do what they've done to so many bottom half of the table, now I'm not saying Palace are going to end up in bottom half of the table, I'm just saying they've done it to maybe the perceived weaker sides in the league, whereby they've scored a goal early, kind of dampened their spirits, sucked the life out of them, and then they just go and have a field day.
Yeah.
So Palace have to be very careful of that. Set up Claire. Now, in fairness to Hodgson, he's done a brilliant job since he's gone in there. There's no denying that. But he just has to have them regimental and rigid, ready to rock, and not give up anything early or anything stupid early. And if they can do that, build on that base from the first 15 minutes, hold City out, counter-attack effectively, then you never know. Like, I think, as you just mentioned there, a Jordan Ayew, he's been brilliant this year. Like, in fairness, he was man of the match against Man United, and he probably nearly single-handedly earned them the 3 points away to obviously Van Aanholt, who scored the second goal.
He was brilliant against West Ham last week as well.
Exactly. He's been in red-hot form this year. So he's a massive, himself and Zaha both have speed, and them, if they, like, I'm not, what's the status with... obviously, Laporte's out for a long while.
Yeah.
What's the status with...
John Stones.
Yeah.
I think he's still injured. Not 100% about De Bruyne. If De Bruyne's missing, they're going to have a bad day.
Yeah, that's another. He's been class this year. Like.
Exactly. And he was massively missed in that game against Wolves last week. So I'm not sure what his status is. I'm not even sure that he travelled with Belgium.
Yeah. No, he didn't. No, sorry, I was mixing him up. But no, he's been the creator this year, and he's been creator in chief this year for City. He's been brilliant. He scored a few goals as well. But his delivery and distribution has just been incredible. Some of the balls he's played into the box would make you weep. They're so accurate. Like,
but it's incredible that with the wealth of talent that Manchester City have, that taking one player out of the side can make such a difference. Like we've seen for years, there's loads of teams have had a talisman, and when they're not there, like you think of Gerrard over the years with Liverpool, if he's not there, the team performs much worse.
I think N'Golo Kante at the minute with Chelsea.
Kante with Chelsea, exactly. But you look at the City side and you think, surely they have enough to cover. When I know De Bruyne is world class, there's no denying that, but surely, like, if you look around the City squad, there should be enough to, like, the two Silvas, you have a wealth of talent there to fill in. But it just didn't seem to work for him last week when he wasn't there.
I think he has that special something that not many players have. Like, he's just that, he has that vision. Like, he attempts balls that people are going, what are you doing? And then when he does it, you're like, oh my God, it was incredible.
True.
Like, he plays that ball into the tunnel of love perfectly. Then you can't defend against it, you're going to score an own goal. And he has that next level vision that not many players have. So while City do have a lot of top players in their squad, they're just not that, they're not Kevin De Bruyne. Now, in fairness, the form can be patchy at times, but this season, start for, he's been red hot.
Especially this season, he's had a very good relationship with Sterling.
Yeah.
Like, it's no surprise that since he's been injured, Sterling's form has dipped a little bit, because he was on the receiving end of all those raking passes from De Bruyne for the first 7-8 games of the season.
Yeah, I think De Bruyne has kind of turned himself into what David Silva was in the last few years, that real everything kind of runs through him kind of a player.
Yeah.
And he'll be sorely missed, but even if De Bruyne isn't taking any part in the game, he still makes City hot favourites, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they still have a midfield that contains Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, David Silva, Rodri. Ridiculous wealth of talent, you know.
Yeah, the list, they have an incredible bench. So, like, look, that's why they've gone and spent so many millions and probably a billion at this stage, to have that wealth of talent that if someone gets injured, they don't feel it really that much at all. So, look, if they can't do it without the likes of Laporte or De Bruyne, then what have they done, really? Do you know?
I think, kind of in a funny way, I know I'm going back to the Liverpool game, but these games, City and Liverpool games, go hand in hand at the moment, because they're at the top of the table. But I think if City lose this game, it almost makes it harder for Liverpool to win at United, because the pressure becomes greater.
It does. I can see where you're coming from. It makes the 3 points off United even more
nearly a six point
reward. It does become a way bigger a game again. But I don't see that happening, to be honest. I don't think Liverpool will have to contend with that. And look, they're professionals. It's their job to have their minds right on the day. So.
Yeah.
Like, look, whatever happens with Liverpool United or whatever happens with City Palace either, look, the other team should be able to perform now. They're getting paid enough money and a sports psychologist involved. So I don't see that being an issue really, but you never know. But I suppose back to the game at hand.
Sports psychologist, sports could do with a few sports psychologists.
Yeah, oh, stop. Jesus help us. But
anyway, that was a little bit of a sidebar.
Yeah. But
let's make a prediction for this game then.
I think City will win, but I don't think it'll be convincing, and I think it'll be a little bit of magic for maybe Aguero or something like that that'll snatch it. Yeah. But I don't think they're going to be as dominant as they have been in some games this season. I think this will be a tough one for them. I had kind of earmarked Palace as a team to go down at the start of the season. I've definitely changed my mind in that respect, but I still don't think that there are any great shakes. City should be winning this, but Palace will make it hard, and if they give their fans something to cheer about early and are a bit resolute in the first half, you never know what could happen. But I just have a feeling that there'll be a little bit of creativity, a little bit of magic from Sterling or Aguero, and they'll just get the 3 points.
Yeah, I agree. I think probably City, I think they could win this comfortably 4-0, 4-5-0 on their day. But I think if they continue with the form and still have the amount of injuries, I think they'll be happy to leave there with a 1-0.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'd take their hand off for that right now. Yeah. They just want points. They don't care about, like, City can go out and play all the lovely football they want, but that won't chase Liverpool down, and that's all they care about. They'll be focused on that and that alone. They'll just want to 3 points after 3 points after 3 points, and that'll become the focus now, and each loss will compound their misery, so they'll just be rabid in their chase of 3 points, and they won't care how they get it.
But if Palace win, I'll be glad all over.
Oh, join the club.
And on that weird note, let's move on to Chelsea versus Newcastle. That's at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea who've massively turned a corner, it seems, in the last few games, and they'll be looking to make it 3 wins in a row in this game.
Absolutely, yeah. They dispelled their weird home record of not having a win in the Premier League at home, and they've for a while, and they've won their last two now at home. They're in great form. They're scoring plenty of goals. Their back four has solidified somewhat. N'Golo Kante, I'm not sure he's still 100% fit. We saw it again. He played against Liverpool, and then he came on.
He got injured on France duty.
Yeah, this weekend just
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. Oh, sorry, I didn't realise that. And yeah. Well, any I think prognosis?
He was withdrawn before the game because of a muscle strain, so he didn't play for France. So it doesn't bode well for him playing against Newcastle.
No, I wonder is that an aggravation of what has plagued him at the start of the season, or is it something different?
Whatever's up with him seems to be a kind of a recurring thing that they can't sort out, because he seems to be play a game.
So it's like they're resting him doubly compared to everyone else, really.
Yeah, yeah. And Ooh. It does make a massive difference for Chelsea. Now, you would think against Newcastle at Stamford Bridge, when they have Kovacic and Jorginho in there, that they should have enough. But then you look at the two Longstaffs and what they did against United.
Yeah. I think, in fairness, that performance needs to be qualified with the fact that was probably United's worst performance in a long, long time. They were diabolical.
Yeah.
But
the youngest of the Longstaffs, Matty.
Yeah.
Who scored the goal against United. He looks bags of energy. Yeah. Like, he almost looks like he has Kante level energy. Obviously, he doesn't have Kante level skill, but he just runs around everywhere. Like,
yeah, they broke United hearts, the two of them. They were brilliant. And like, he obviously barred and scoring the goal, which he took very well. He rattled the crossbar.
Exactly, hit the crossbar.
And he broke up play a lot. He turned over possession two or three times. He was a real live wire in the middle of the field, and that will be a loss to Chelsea if Kante doesn't start. Now, it's not as if Newcastle are going to be going hell for leather attacking, they're going to sit back here and there's no doubt.
Against United, they played, what was it, 5-3-1 or something like that?
Lovely. Well, they'd want to be playing 5-4-1, I'd say.
5-4-1, sorry. My maths let me down there a little bit.
Don't worry, they probably could have played a 5-3-1 and still won.
But they did. They went very defensive against United, and you would imagine going away to Stamford Bridge, they will do the same thing. And they're not really blessed with a lot of goals. Joelinton looks like a bit of a letdown after his early season kind of high hopes.
Yeah, they still only have 5 goals in in 8 games. That's not up to par, as we know. You'd want more than that. So while it was great, it was a lovely boost. They've beaten Spurs and they've beaten United. So, and both away from home as well. No, sorry, they beat United at home. So, but two nice scalps early in the season for Newcastle, but still, they sit in 16th for a reason. You know, the season has not been good.
The only thing I would say going into this game is Chelsea don't really have a player who can kind of pick a lock of a defensive team. Do you know, since Hazard's left, they don't really have anyone who can do those quick little passes around the defence.
Not really, no, but
they might struggle to break Newcastle down.
I can see where you're coming from, but they've so much speed now, raw speed in the team, and they can counter quickly themselves. I know they'll play a high line likely.
Yeah, but you have to be attacked on to counter on somebody.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
Like if you look at what Spurs did to Newcastle, they literally just sat in and frustrated. What Newcastle did to Spurs.
Yeah.
Newcastle aren't going there for 3 points. They're going there for their 1 point.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's hard. Well, in fairness, they might try just down the wings, and Abraham is well able and through the air too. So
yeah,
there's more than one way to skin a cat. You don't need Eden Hazard to open up teams. They can find ways. And
in saying that, I suppose Willian is still there.
Willian,
he doesn't play much, but he could be the type of player for this game. He's a tricky kind of player.
Mount is well able to move and beat players too. So he's well able to find the pass. So I wouldn't be too fearful for Chelsea. If you were to ask me,
yeah,
I think this is a great opportunity to get 3 more points at home and keep their good start to the season going. They're gonna be targeting the next couple of games. Now they've won their last 2. They've won 3 of the last 4. I can't see anything here but a Chelsea win.
If Chelsea win this game and other results go their way, they could end up 3rd in the Premier League.
Yep. So that says it. Well, they could end up second theoretically. If Palace beat City, they could end up second.
What a weekend that would be.
Yeah. So to me, Chelsea win. I just don't see anything else, really, to be honest.
I've a funny feeling Newcastle are going to frustrate Chelsea in this game.
Do you? I don't know. I think I wouldn't get too excited about Newcastle beating Man United, because I think
I'm not excited.
Leighton Orient would have beaten Man United the way they played last week.
That's harsh on Leighton Orient.
Yeah, it probably is, to be fair, because they would have probably beat them comfortably the way how bad United were. It's beyond belief. But I think you're gonna see Newcastle regress to their mean level of performance, and that isn't good enough to contest with Chelsea in Stamford Bridge, to my eye anyway. So to me, I'm going 2-0 Chelsea. Go for it. If it's your hunch, you got it.
I think this could be a nil all. I think it just could be a nil all. I just think Newcastle are just... I just don't see how Chelsea can break down Newcastle if they just come and sit in and frustrate. Maybe Steve Bruce will have a rush of blood to the head and he'll decide that he wants to go and be Barcelona and attack Chelsea, and then he'll probably ship 17 goals at the end. But I don't really see that happening. So
nah.
I think I'm going to go with nil all on this one, and I'll probably be proven very wrong when Chelsea score 5 goals, but I'm going to go with nil all.
Fair enough. That's balls, and we admire that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't sit on the fence all the time.
No, you can't. You can't.
Right, let's... talk about Sheffield United, who welcome Arsenal to the Steel City.
Tough one. Wouldn't like to be... no one likes going there. Now,
let's preface this by saying Arsenal have an absolutely diabolical away record.
Yeah, they've won one away game this season, to be fair to them now, but...
But going back into last season, they couldn't buy an away win.
Yeah, it's their away... As we've said, their away record leaves a lot to be desired, so... Yeah, this is not one that I'd say Arsenal fans will be looking at with. It's one of those ones where you're, you know, your team will be favourite, but you're going, I don't know. This is a this is one you want to take a 1-0 and get out of there as quickly as possible unscathed.
I mean, we're talking about Chelsea frustrating or Newcastle frustrating Chelsea, but Sheffield United are the masters of frustration.
Oh, stop, sure. Wasn't it against Everton? They won 2-1 and or was it 2-0?
They won 2-0 with one shot on target.
One shot on target, yeah. I think they had one shot on most of the game. Yeah. I think it was only one shot in the game. Like they were in, was it Everton's half twice in the first half or something like that?
Twice in the entire game, I think.
Jesus, yeah. Like that'll tell you, like they really, really sit in. They have Wilder has the way he wants to play, and in fairness, they're tough, but it's not. They're not the most exciting team in the world, and as we know, McGoldrick picked up an injury as well playing for Ireland. So he definitely isn't available for Ireland as we're recording this. We're recording this on Monday, so before the week before. So it looks like McGoldrick will be out. So Callum Robinson, again another Irish man, won't be exactly lighting the sky on fire, and hasn't been. I think he's had one goal. In the Premier League this season, and there just isn't much of a threat going forward for Sheffield. And as we know, Arsenal are scoring goals. They're leaky. They're conceding plenty of them, but they're scoring bags of them as well. So,
I think this is one that would kind of go against the form of Arsenal having a bad away record. You would expect them to take 3 points from here.
This seems like a good opportunity for them. Yeah.
Sheffield. Sheffield will sit in and they will try and frustrate Arsenal, but Arsenal are coming with a front three of Lacazette, Aubameyang and Pepe. Yeah. You know, there's plenty there to break down a stubborn defence.
They should be looking at this now and they'd want to be winning it. Like when McGoldrick is like their lead striker and he's out, it's all the same because we know what level McGoldrick is at.
Yeah.
They just don't have the quality up front. Now they can counter fairly well. We saw that against Liverpool too. They had a couple of chances. So Arsenal will have to be careful on the counter. And my God, we've talked about it until we're blue in the face about Arsenal's back four. We won't go into it. They're shaky at best.
Yeah.
But just have to be careful for that. But otherwise, I see Arsenal scoring 2 or 3 and winning fairly handily.
What is the story with Mesut Ozil?
I don't know. I actually forgot he even played for Arsenal, to be honest.
I Emery just does not fancy him at all.
No, well, he's lazy. Like, we've known that for years. Maybe he just isn't having any of that anymore.
Yeah, like, he obviously he's always had the reputation of being lazy, but, or maybe he's just can't reach the fitness levels of other players. Like, I remember when he played under Mourinho at Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
Mourinho took him off every game, and at the 65th, 70th minute, he never, ever played 90 minutes. He played 65th, 70th minute, and then Modric generally came on for him. This is before Modric became one of the best players in the world. So, but then he came to Arsenal under Wenger, and he was expected to play 90 minutes every game. And he very quickly became what was perceived as a lazy player. But I think, yeah, obviously maybe he does have issues with laziness.
He's lazy. Like, there's no two ways about it. He just doesn't work hard enough. Like,
but he doesn't have the fitness levels either to keep up with the Premier League.
It's his job. Like, I don't buy into that shite for 1 second. Like, yeah, it's his job to be fit. He does nothing else. He's getting paid well enough for it. I'm sorry, like, he obviously compared to the everyday man, he's flying fit. But for Premier League soccer, to last 90 minutes, he'd want to be that fit. Like, or what is it? What are they doing paying him? I hate that shite. Like, to be honest about it, oh, he's preserving his fitness. No, he should be able to break our balls for 90 minutes. Like, that, I know, so it doesn't suit some people's style. Obviously, he's like,
I think I'm after enlightening a touch paper here.
Yeah, I hate that. Like, there's no excuse for laziness. You can make excuses for other things like mistakes and stuff, but there's times when you're watching us, like, and not even as an Arsenal fan, and you're frustrated watching him going, you'd want to be putting in more of a shift. His head goes down. And like, I couldn't believe a couple of years ago when they made him captain. I thought, what in the name of Jesus he make? Like, what an example to be setting. Like,
Arsenal have always done this thing that the players vote for captain. It's always been the way under every manager. It's
must have been a fucking joke that they were pulling.
But they voted for Xhaka this year.
Yeah, a fella who just seems to be passionate about the colour yellow.
Yeah, a fella who to be honest, I don't think he can even play football.
Nah, he's just interested in rugby tackling people. Maybe he needs a change of sport.
But obviously, we don't know what like these guys are like in the dressing room. But for some reason, the players voted for Xhaka as captain and previously voted for Ozil as captain. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that the Arsenal midfield is fairly boring with Torreira, Guendouzi and Xhaka.
In fairness to Guendouzi, I think he's been good this year. I think he's improved, and I think he's getting to grips with where he needs to be to play in the midfield.
But I think he's a great player. Yeah. I think he's a great player. He breaks up play very well, but most of his passes are sideways and backwards. Kind of a typical holding midfield type, but I'm just saying there's no flair in the Arsenal midfield anymore.
Shame about the haircut as well. Like he needs to that's
there's two David Luises.
It's sideshow Bob material. He just needs to lose it. It's just, it's awful. Like
but you always know where he is on the pitch when you're watching.
Yeah, yeah. It's easy seeing him. Yeah, you wouldn't find it hard to pick him out. But that Arsenal midfield is much of a muchness, I think. I'm not completely sold on Torreira either.
I think it's a fairly workman-like midfield, I think is the best way of putting it.
Will we see Ceballos in there more and more? Do you reckon? It's hard to know.
I thought after the first couple of games of the season when he played, and he played very well, I thought he's going to play every game in there. Then he played against Liverpool and he may as well not have been on the pitch.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really kind of come back from that. He hasn't really reached the form he did in the games previous. Like against Spurs, he was electric.
Yeah. What do you think, what kind of a team will he put out now? Because obviously he knows he's going to be facing into a defensive-minded Sheffield.
I think he's going to go all out. I think this will be another 4-3-3 where he plays his three strikers. And I'd say he'd probably play Ceballos, Torreira and Guendouzi. He always plays Guendouzi.
Yeah, he does.
Since he signed him, I think he's played every single game for Arsenal in the Premier League.
That's solid going, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have been mad about him early on, but I think in this season, I think Guendouzi has shown that he'll be up to it in time. He's only 17 last year when he started playing. I think he's just 19. I could be wrong on that, but he does have a future ahead of him, to be fair.
Even at that, like, that's very young for a Premier League midfielder.
Oh, it is. It's very, very young. Yeah,
let's call a prediction on this one.
Arsenal, can't see where the goals are coming from for Sheffield, so 2-0 Arsenal.
I'd agree with that. I'd say 2-3-0 Arsenal.
Sounds good.
Right now, we'll take a little break and then we'll come back and we will rattle through the rest of the fixtures because they're all pretty boring compared to the first four we spoke about. So we'll be back very shortly. Welcome back. We've six other fixtures to talk about. Some of them aren't actually as boring as I said beforehand. Yeah, so I'll take that back. That's a terrible thing to be saying about our poor Premier League.
I know exactly what fixture you just looked at that changed your mind, and I was looking at it as well.
Are we talking about West Ham versus Everton?
We are. We're talking about Everton versus West Ham, actually, because it's on in Goodison Park.
Yeah, well,
get your facts right, okay?
Yeah, well, whatever. Yeah, that's actually a tasty one. I mean, Everton are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Marco Silva
is
in big trouble. And West Ham are flattering to deceive this season. We keep talking about how good they should be before they play, and then they're not.
Yeah, they're teased, aren't they?
Yeah.
Again, like I was referencing earlier about Man United and a chance to turn around their fortune, this exact same for Everton, but it's actually even gravely worse. They've lost their last four. They're the only club in the Premier League to have lost their last four. They're in massive, massive trouble. If they don't get a result here, we've said it. We said this 3 or 4 weeks ago that we thought Silva would be gone even before the Man City game.
Yeah.
So I just I don't see how he survives if they don't get 3 points here. I just don't see it. So, but you never know. There seems to be undying faith in him within the club. So we'll see. But in the game itself, like, if their form hasn't turned around, like, West Ham have to be favoured.
I would nearly put my house on Everton not getting 3 points in this game.
Would you?
I think it's just gone to shit.
Well, it has gone to shit, but how badly?
I think it looks like we've seen it a million times before when managers lose their job, that it's just gone. It's just, they couldn't buy a win if they tried.
Yeah. There has been fits and starts from them where you're seeing bits of performances. Like again, I was, as we said, it was a bit of a moral good performance against City, but yeah, they're gonna have to win this game if he's gonna keep his job. Well, whatever about him keeping his job, they're gonna have to win this game if they don't want to really be found themselves caught adrift from safety. Do you know, like the,
yeah,
I know they're joined in points with Southampton at 17th, but like they haven't picked up a point in their last four games. They really, really, really need to start picking up points now, or else things are going to go from, geez, we've had a bad start to the season, to, oh my God, we could actually get relegated here. And they are the only team that has never been relegated from the top division.
I with their squad they have, if they get relegated, it would be an absolute shocker.
A travesty, it would. But sure, Jesus, Leicester won the league 4 or 5 years ago.
You know, that's true.
It wouldn't be that big a shock.
Yeah, I just don't see Everton getting anything from this game. Like every game I've watched, like Silva looks like a broken man on the sideline. The players just don't seem to be doing it. Some of them look like they want to be trying. Others look like they couldn't even be arsed being there. It's that old phrase, busted flush.
Yeah, it does look like they look a beaten hand, right?
And they shouldn't be. The squad they have, like, that's an excellent squad for an Everton side. Like, David Moyes would have ripped your hand off for that squad.
Oh, 100%, yeah. This, like, there was just unabashed enthusiasm at the start of the season from where Everton were and what they could possibly achieve with their squad of players. And now, like, relegation isn't, like, forget about top six, that's gone. That was their aim at the start of the season. That's what they wanted to break in. You're now looking if you can claw your way out of relegation and see if you can maybe with your fingertips get into the top half, but I don't see that happening. But it starts here at home to West Ham on Saturday morning, if it's going to start at all. They have to win this game, like.
Yeah.
And if they don't, it again, like as I was saying earlier about United, it just continues a terrible run, and it feels like you had no break, diminishes the refreshing nature of a break. Feels like you're back straight into it again, and you're just picking up from where you left off. And if that happens, I think Silva will be gone. And again, whoever, as we've talked about previously, who they get in, only Jesus knows.
Yeah.
But
and they're facing into this game without Seamus Coleman. He's on a ban from his red card.
Yeah, exactly. So that's their captain and leader, moral leader anyway.
Yeah. And they have to put up with Lanzini, Fornals, Anderson, Noble,
Haller.
It's not a mouthwatering prospect for Everton fans, I don't think.
No, it's not. Do I believe Everton can get something out of the game? Yes. Do I think they will? It's hard. I actually favour a draw here. I have a funny feeling that Silva is going to rally these for one last stand. And this is going to be it. He's going to have them G'd up all week to really hit the ground running after this break. You have to use this break for positive purposes and just try and put your last four games behind you and really attack the next four. And if the only
thing that'll go in their favour is that West Ham seriously have flattered to deceive so far. Like they should have beaten Crystal Palace before the game, like on paper with the squad they have and the manager they have, they should have beaten Crystal Palace. And then there's other games where they've had good results and then they just haven't, they're very stop start.
Yeah, they are. They've played unreal in patches. They've looked class, but when people have, again, we've talked about how the likes of United and Spurs and that have started slowly and stopped and started. The likes of maybe West Ham or that would have filled in. And they looked at times that they were going to be that team.
Yeah.
But in other times, they haven't. They really haven't.
And they really should be. And another commentator I was reading said this is the best West Ham side in the Premier League era. So they should be doing better than they are. Anyway, let's make a prediction for this game.
1-1 I think Everton are really going to rally and I think you're going to see a kickback, but I think that will be short lived. I think they'll fight, they will put up a fight, but I don't see a change in fortune, unfortunately for them, I think for in the near future anyway. So I think they'll get a point. I think it'll be 1-1.
I'm going to go 2-0 to West Ham.
I just
think it's gone sour at Everton. Next question before we move on to the next game. If Everton lose this game, does Silva lose his job?
That's telling. Sorry, there was a bit of a yawn. Jesus, if he didn't, the fans must be going crazy.
Yeah.
To be honest, like I know you can't blame a manager for everything, but like the fans are surely sickened now. Especially with, it feels cruel in a sense because they thought, oh yeah, we're moving in the right direction after a few years, and this is the chance now with the squad we've built, and then for this to happen, it feels a bit harsh on them, but I just think something has to change, and they can't change the team, so they're gonna have to be seen to take action to correct what's going on, and the corrective action will be Silva out the door if they lose.
Okay, I'm going to go with the short version of that answer, which is yes.
So you have to show your markings at times. But anyway, yeah.
Anyway, next game we'll talk about Aston Villa Brighton. Aston Villa, who are probably playing above what they should be as a newly promoted side, they've been performing very well. Brighton, who were performing horrendously until last week when they put two past Spurs.
Yeah.
Three past Spurs, in fact. Two for Aaron Connolly and one other.
Yeah, that was mad. Unreal to see young Aaron Connolly do that. Obviously, from a green-tinted glasses perspective, we want to see young Irish talent flourish in the Premier League. That was a terrible performance from Spurs, but we'll get on to them soon. Great performance from Brighton, fair play to them. They were fully deserving of it, but we've seen that with Spurs this season. So against Newcastle and other games where they've been on the ropes. And I take that Brighton thing as that Brighton result as an anomaly. And yeah. I fully fancy Villa here, especially at home. I think Villa are going to win this game. Yeah. I have said it already. I don't see much hope for Brighton. Don't see really what... They have, as great as it was to see Aaron Connolly come on and score two goals on his debut. I'd say his first start for Brighton in the Premier League. Like, he's not that highly rated and never. He wasn't even in the Irish squad until that game. So that'll tell you where he is.
Yeah.
And like, the Irish squad isn't, as everyone knows, is no great shakes. Now, he's young, so we'll see. But Brighton just don't have much. They're a real scrape in the barrel squad-wise. And Villa aren't. To be honest, Villa aren't.
Right. Brighton are also missing Shane Duffy, who's probably their best player.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is, and he's rock solid defensively. We know that. So,
I think I agree with you. I think Villa will win this comfortably, probably by one or two goals.
As I've said, that Villa result against Norwich was coming. I know it looks bad for Norwich, and they're leaking goals left, right, and centre, as we said they would all season, but that Villa result was coming. They had been unlucky in a few games. They've actually been playing relatively well. I do not fear for Villa at all. In the Premier League this season, I think they'll stay up comfortably. But I just don't see what Brighton are going to pose here away from home. I just see Villa winning this 2 or 3-0.
I agree. So let's move on to a team who have probably been one of the worst teams in the Premier League this season. And they're welcoming Watford.
Lovely. Spurs fans won't be happy with that. But this is the perfect time for Spurs to be playing Watford, isn't it?
It's the perfect time for Watford to be playing Spurs as well.
If Watford are ever going to get out of their funk and move off rock bottom of the table, and they need to play Spurs to do it, this is the time.
Yeah, in fairness, Spurs' form, as you said, has been very Spursy, as the old cliche goes. Up, down, they've won last one. Their last four games.
Yeah.
So only God knows what Spurs are going to turn up like. They were dismal against Brighton. Yeah. Absolutely horrendous.
Really, really bad.
Yeah.
Like, the entire squad to a man was poor.
Yeah.
Oh. Every player was a yard off the pace. It was painful watching.
So we'll just see. This is, again, a great time to be playing Watford. Watford are diabolical as well, to be fair. Now, they're battling. In fairness, that has to be said. Watford are fighting for their lives.
Yeah.
But... it's just not happening from 3 points in the Premier League so far. Spurs have far superior quality. If they turn up at all, they'll win. But we would have said the same probably against Brighton, you know. But
Spurs are at home for this game, so you would really expect even Spurs on a bad day should have enough to beat Watford at home.
You're hoping so. Newcastle did a job there against them, but Watford I don't think will play that way.
No.
Watford actually like to play football, and it probably counts against them a bit. Yeah. But I kind of ramble on at times, but to me, short answer here, Spurs will win this.
I would think so, and I think if they don't, then there's going to be a magnifying glass over Pochettino, because...
He'll get in saying that, I agree with you, but in saying that, he'll walk into a lovely job after that, because everyone knows he's top quality, but there's only so much he can do.
Yeah, sure. Zidane is keeping his seat warm in Madrid, I think.
That seems to be the general feeling, yeah. But like, it's a pity for Spurs, because after last season, you know, they had a great season reaching their first ever Champions League final. Things were looked to be going in the right direction, and this season has started in fits and starts, and just it seems to be very Spursy again all of a sudden after a year of solid, consistent performance.
Yeah, but if you don't go out and improve your squad in the summer, you don't expect improvement season on season, and Spurs haven't brought in anybody in the last. They didn't bring anyone in the last transfer window, and then this one they brought in Ndombele just to replace Moussa Dembele, who was leaving.
Mm.
And it was a pretty much a like for like.
So it was, yeah.
There's been no improvement, and the squad is aging quickly.
It is,
if you look around that Spurs squad, it's a good age. Like,
you'd be looking like for replacements for Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Eriksen. There's a lot. Like, there's more. You can go. Danny Rose is no spring chicken. There's a good few players that are mid to late 20s, even pushing on towards 30s.
Exactly.
As we know with Eriksen. So you have to feel as well, I must be said, for Hugo Lloris, that injury was disgusting. Dislocated his elbow.
Very, very. He won't play again in 2019.
No, I don't think he'll play this season, because I know just from personally, my brother dislocated his elbow last year.
Yeah.
And he still doesn't have the full range of motion back in it. It's still stiff at times and stuff. So,
Yeah, but your brother doesn't have a handful of highly paid physiotherapists at his beck and call.
Valid point. The only time he bend his elbow after that was to lift a pint, so he probably didn't need to use it as much, so hence the stiffness. But
the line from the club is he won't play again in 2019, but he will play again early in the new year, but that remains to be seen. I don't think, to be honest, that Hugo Lloris is an excellent keeper, we all know that, but I don't think he's a massive loss to Spurs. I think Gazzaniga is a good
able enough deputy, but still, I know Lloris can make howlers, we've seen that, but
he's still the club captain as well.
Yeah, there's times where he pulls off world class saves too. He really does. There's times he keeps them in games, and I think because he makes the odd mistake here and there, people are just choosing to forget that at times, that he does win them games at times.
He's a quality keeper, and he was quality before he came to Spurs, and there's no denying that. He is also a World Cup winner, so you can't forget that. Anyway, we're rambling on again, and I think Spurs, I agree with you, I think Spurs will win this game, probably 1-2.
Yeah, they'd want to win it fairly comfortably now and just get the ball rolling again. If they don't, as you said, the shit show that has been Tottenham this year will just keep going.
Exactly. Moving on, Wolves welcome Southampton. Wolves, who are on a high, obviously, after beating Manchester City. They've had a week off because they've had no Europa League football, which is what has hampered them all season.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have a massive amount of players probably on international duty, so they've had a good break. And they're welcoming a Southampton side that is really stuttering at the moment and kind of plummeting down the table, it looks.
They are, absolutely. Just level. They've lost, Southampton lost their last three, level on points with Everton. I can see them dropping into the bottom three this weekend, because I think Wolves will win. Wolves have got 7 points from their last nine, won their last two games.
I have to say, I'm a massive fan of Nuno Espirito Santo.
Yep, I will completely second that. He's a hero, I think. I like Wolves. I really do like Wolves. I know they're kind of like the way you love Southampton. I would say Bournemouth are my Southampton to you. They're a little kind of side team you like.
I'm worried for Southampton though. Signs are worrying. They've a decent squad. They've a good squad, but they've no goals.
Yeah,
and that's
five goals in the first eight games. It will only get you one thing in this league, is relegation.
Exactly. And I mean, their strikers are Shane Long and Danny Ings. There's not a bag of goals there.
No.
You know, it's all,
no.
I worry for them going forward, unless they can pick a striker out of thin air or else just shore up at the back things.
Will they go looking for a striker at Christmas? Like, will they go and spend that money? Do they have that money to spend?
One thing you have to say about Southampton, though, is they have an incredible recruitment policy.
They do.
They just find these diamonds out of nowhere, and they've done it time after time after time. So
I could actually get behind your whole Southampton project if they got a goal scorer at Christmas. I actually could.
Yeah.
But as you said, Ings won't do it often enough, I don't think. And I really like Danny Ings, because when he was at Liverpool and before he got injured, he broke his heart every time he went onto the field. He left it all out there.
Yeah, he wore,
and you
he
have to admire
hard,
that.
Like,
yeah. But I just think since he came back from that injury, he hasn't been the same, and he hasn't got that pace kind of either. So like, there's not much up front for Nathan Redmond is a great player. I really like him, but he can't do it all on his own.
Danny Ings reminds me a lot of an ex-Southampton striker, Jay Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
Who was setting the world alight, got a bad injury, kept him out for a year, and now he's just been a journeyman throughout clubs and can't score goals anymore.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that totally. But in relation to this fixture, I do fancy Wolves here.
Yeah,
I think so. They're, as you said, they're riding a high. They've had a break.
Yeah.
They'll have loved that break. They'll have time to just take a breather, rest the legs a bit. We've said it a few times now, into the perfect fixture. I think a team that are struggling at, and they have them at coming to their ground massive. I think Wolves will be relishing this fixture, and I think they'll win it.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. There's probably plenty of goals in it for Wolves because Southampton don't have the steadiest of defences either. So I'd say Wolves will win this by a couple.
Agreed, yeah, 2-0. I go 2-0 Wolves, sorry.
Excellent. Let's have a look at Leicester, who are in the Champions League spots at the moment, and they're welcoming Burnley to the King Power Stadium. Nobody likes to play Burnley ever.
No, they don't.
Even Manchester City don't like to play Burnley. They're just a stubborn mule of a team.
they're annoying is what they are. And in a good way. It's not as if they annoy me, but they're annoying.
What Sean Dyche does with that group of players, if you take a look at that group of players and you sit down and list them out, you would feel like you're listing a championship team, even a League One team.
Mm.
What Sean Dyche gets out of them is just incredible. Mm.
Burnley's style of play is literally Sean Dyche's voice. It's just that is literally it. It's just that, just a monotonous, just grinding down of their opposition. That's
Barty Rodman's.
Yeah, literally. You know, so they do. Like, in fairness, it has worked for them. They've got two wins and two draws from the last four games. That's a very good run for them. Now they're facing a tough fixture here.
They're literally like the shithouses of the Premier League.
Even
the attitude of Barnes and Wood when they play against defenders, that's a microcosm of what Burnley are.
Oh, 100%. I think they're facing into a tough fixture here now, though.
I think Leicester will probably have too much for them.
You'd imagine so. I'd agree with you, but it'd be interesting to see your man Soyuncu against probably Barnes.
I think Soyuncu had a very good game against Liverpool. I'm pronouncing it as best I can. I don't know if it's correct.
All right, grandson.
I think it's Soyuncu. I'm just copying what the commentators on the television said. But he had a very good game against Liverpool because he got to rely on his pace, which he has in abundance. Woods and Barnes is a very different prospect.
Yeah.
Very different prospect. They're not going to be running past you. They're going to be kicking you and punching you and elbowing you and jumping up against you.
Yeah, it's different, right?
He's not the biggest guy in the world, Soyuncu. Don't get me wrong, I said it in the last podcast, he's an excellent defender. He showed that against Liverpool, but I think he has his work cut out for him. And he's not going to get an awful lot of help from Johnny Evans against those two.
Yeah, it's going to be grim enough. And Evans had a stinker in international duty as well. Got nuts, I think, for a late goal by the Netherlands. So, I fancy Leicester here, right? They've shown time again why they're in fourth this season. They've great, lovely creativity, speed up front. They're more solid than what I would have given them credit for at the back.
Yeah.
They've got some lovely, young, exciting midfielders, you know, so...
I fancy Leicester, but I don't think they're going to have it all their own way.
No, they won't. You never have a draw. Very rarely you'll get it your own way against Burnley. That's where they are. They learn. They'll fight for every ball. They'll grind you down. Even if you're 3-0 up, they don't just sit down and take it. They really are a physical, in-your-face team. It's going to be the same here, but I think the likes of, say, Barnes, Madison, Vardy, Choudhury, I think they've got enough quality. Tielemans, Perez, I think they have just enough lovely players that they should be able to, as you were talking about earlier, picking the lock.
Yeah.
I think they have enough creativity to pick Burnley's lock.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm going to go with something like 2-1 Leicester. I think Burnley will have a say in this game, but I think Leicester will just have a little bit too much.
Agreed. I think our final game, is it? Yeah, it is.
Our final game
Bournemouth and Norwich.
Bournemouth have to be looking at three points here.
Bournemouth will win this game. They'll score 3 or 4. King and Wilson are flying it at the minute.
Yeah.
Solanke's coming on, making a difference. The Bournemouth had chances against Arsenal. They maybe could have got something from that game. And before that, they were going great guns. You have, as I said, Wilson, King, Solanke. Harry Wilson has done very well since he's gone there.
Jordan Ibe, he's not setting the world alight, but he comes off the bench and causes problems for people.
Exactly, yeah.
They have some good players.
Ryan Fraser is a cracker. I think they'll have too much for Norwich. Norwich are just, many goals have they? 21. They've conceded more than 2.5 goals per game.
Yeah, I think after their early season high, I think the wheels have seriously fallen off for Norwich. Then.
They've got 3 points from their last 15, and that was 3 points at home to City. Yeah. So that says it all, really. Bar that blip in the right direction, mind, but bar that blip, they've lost their last four games other than that. So, and I see this being another one because they'll finish bottom, I'd say, nearly. I could see Watford leapfrog and them, but I think both of them are certs to go down. But
unfortunately, it does look like that for the rest of the season, the Norwich fixtures will always be. That's a win for the other side.
It does, and it was lovely at the start when it was going well, and the way the brand of football I play was like, oh yeah, they're scoring well, Timo Pukki's on fire. But the more they get the shit kicked out of them every week, the harder it becomes to stomach, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, and things just keep continually getting worse until you try and change the style of play, which they can't because they're not used to playing that way, and then things get worse again. For me, it looks like it's a free fall for Norwich, and it'll stay going that way. So... yeah, to me, but I think Ennis, Bournemouth at home, I just see Bournemouth winning this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think Bournemouth will win it, and I couldn't even just give a score prediction because it could really be any score.
I'm going to go 3-1, sure.
3-1?
Yeah.
You're going to give Pukki a goal, are you?
Ah, yeah, Pukki or Cantwell, sure. Like, but Norwich tend to come up with a goal. They come up with a goal against Villa, even though they were absolutely railroaded.
Yeah, they do play some nice football.
They can play lovely football, and they can counter well, but usually it's just being absolutely their goal is being laid siege to for 85 minutes. So that's where the kind of danger is.
But teams that can play good football when confidence is high tend to lose that when the confidence goes, and it looks, you have to be looking at Norwich, and after their recent fixtures, the confidence has to be going game on game.
Yeah, they've lost six games this season, and it's probably going to be number seven.
All right, I'm going to agree with you on the score. I'm going to say Bournemouth will win it, and probably by at least 2 goals.
Yeah, for sure.
And on that note, we'll leave it there for this week. Thank you very much for listening. If you stuck with us this long, do give us a comment on any of our social media. Subscribe to our podcasts. We're on all the usual networks. We're a member of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network in the USA. And we're grateful for every single listener we have. So do give us a rating if you enjoy our podcast. And we'll be back next week with Match Week 10.
This is the Premier League Preview Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Premier_podcast. Find us on Facebook under Premier League Preview Podcast or online at plpreview.com.